Chapter 8. Elmas Private Spaceport, Coronet, Corellia, Rental Bay 601208.
Dad, something's happening outside.
Instantly awake, still dressed in a jumpsuit not much improved by having been worked in for a day, Wedge rolled out of his cot and joined his daughter at the hangar's side viewport. The viewport was mostly covered in black sheeting, in which Miri and Iella had cut strategic holes for viewing. The interior of the hangar was in darkness, so it took his eyes no time to adjust. Across the accessway between rows of rental hangars, three people were making a hurried approach. They stopped well short of Wedge's hangar and clustered around a personnel door two hangars down.
"Not our problem,"
Wedge said, rubbing his eyes. He'd gotten to sleep only an hour or two earlier, after a long session of performing vehicle repairs and maintenance. Miri had been right to awaken him, but he was anxious to get back to sleep.
"I think it is."
The voice was Corin's, from just behind Wedge, and Wedge started. He turned to offer Corin a mock glare.
"Ex-Corsec and Jedi. Makes you twice as sneaky. What makes you think it's a problem? You can't even see out there."
"But I can feel."
Corin gestured toward the distant arrivals.
"One of them is Leia Solo."
Wedge whipped around and put his eye to the peephole again. The three people had disappeared, presumably having gone through the door.
"You're sure?"
"I'm sure."
"What's all the noise?"
Stumbling down the boarding ramp of the Pulsar Skate, her Baudo-class yacht, covering a yawn and half-smothering her words with one hand, was Mirax Horn, Corin's wife and Miri's namesake. Wedge had known her for decades. She was the daughter of Booster Tarek, Wedge's mentor in the smuggling trade back in the days before Wedge joined the Rebel Alliance. Round-faced, with black hair cut in a short, practical style, she retained much of the fresh-faced, blue-eyed beauty that had characterized her when she and Wedge were both teenagers.
"Leia's two doors down, with two strange men," Wedge said.
"How do you know they're two strange men?" Mirax asked. "It might be Han and Luke."
"Han and Luke are two strange men."
Wedge looked around the people assembled before him. Only Iella was still horizontal. On her cot, beneath the S-foil of Wedge's X-wing, she had pulled her pillow over her head to muffle all the conversational noise.
"In a couple of minutes, when they've had time to relax, we'll send someone over."
"Me?"
Miri said.
"I'm the only one of us whose face isn't all over Corsex or Assassin's shoot-on-sight guides."
Corin gave her a melancholy little smile.
"It's not going to happen, girl."
"Uncle Corin, if you're going to give me the same old you're too young argument—"
Corin cut her off with a gesture and a shake of his head.
"Listen."
Everyone did. They could all hear the rush of thrusters and repulsor lifts. Wedge found it curious that he couldn't identify the speeder from its engine noise. Then he realized why. He wasn't listening to one speeder close by, but to several farther away, their engine and thruster noises blending together and echoing off hangar walls. And the noise was getting louder. Closer.
"Iella!"
Wedge called. His wife pulled the pillow from her face and looked at him, cross but alert.
"Everyone, set up for immediate evacuation."
Iella rolled up out of her cot and began struggling into her boots. She caught Wedge's attention, then glanced in the direction of his cot and boots. Up the accessway, from the direction Leia and her companions had come, a stream of Corsec speeders, orange and blue lights blinking to signal their official status, roared toward them, each coming to a stop in front of a different hangar. Corsec officers poured out of the vehicles and immediately began moving to hangar entryways. One began banging on the door into Wedge's shelter. Corin sighed.
"Thanks, Leia."
Corellia, control cabin of the Love Commander.
"Power coming online in 2 minutes,"
Leia announced. Lando tried to keep his dissatisfaction from his face.
I hate transports with slow startup times, he grumbled. If that idiot had had any sense, he'd have installed a 10-second starter.
If he'd had any sense, he wouldn't have lost his yacht to you, Han said. Relax. We have plenty of time.
Through the front viewports, they could all see the line of sparks appear at the hangar door as a laser cutting tool outside sheared through the locking mechanism. The door rolled open, and half a dozen Corsac agents charged in. Just outside, making the final turn to aim at the Love Commander, was an old, though doubtless still deadly, TIE crawler. The ball-shaped cockpit, familiar from TIE fighters, was mounted between two low rectangular sets of tank treads, and Lando could see the machine's twin blaster cannon barrels trained squarely on Love Commander's control cabin. A Corsac officer with an oversized comlink held up before his face entered with his men. His words came across Love Commander's comm board, and, magnified, could even be heard through the yacht's hull.
This is Corellian security. Power down and exit your craft immediately for identification.
Leia, stall them, Lando ordered. We can get our shields online in just over a minute.
Leia shook her head. No, they're serious. They'll open fire before then. We can surrender now and escape while we're being transported.
Han's lip had twitched when the word surrender was uttered, and now he shook his head.
Princess, we...
There was an engine roar from outside. All the Corsac agents still outside looked to their right. Some of them ran, into the hangar and toward the Love Commander, or out of sight on the access way. Anywhere that wasn't toward the TIE crawler. A flash of red light hit the crawler's starboard treads, low, almost at the level of the permacrete. The shot flipped the crawler, and it rolled, coming down resting on one of its treads. A starfighter flashed by outside.
That was an X-wing, wasn't it?
Lando asked. Leia nodded.
Wedge?
Han shook his head.
Emerald green, with a checkerboard pattern.
Leia smiled.
Corrin.
Then an X-wing in standard gray with red piping flashed by.
Power? Lando asked.
Leia checked her status board.
Coming online in 3, 2, 1, now.
Shields up, Lando ordered. Get us out of here.
Leia lifted Love Commander up on her repulsors and glided forward. Corsac agents scattered out of her way. At the door into the hangar, she delicately nudged the TIE crawler aside. Delicately, in the sense that neither vehicle was damaged by the impact, though Lando shuddered at the sound of metal shrieking and scraping as they passed, then turned in the wake of the two X-wings. Immediately, the sensor screens lit up and began chiming. Lando activated his display screen and got a night-side image, all in shades of green, of the holocam view from the front of Love Commander. He saw little but a line of Corsac speeders parked on the access way.
I read one vehicle, size suited to a personal yacht, emerging from a hangar behind us, Han said. Hey, I think it's the Pulsar's gate.
Lando switched his display over to a rear holocam view. Emerging from a hangar door only two buildings away was a long, low yacht, shaped something like an example of gliding undersea life from the aquatic world of Mon Calamari. Essentially a flying wing with twin thruster pods at the back, it had graceful lines that swept back organically from the bow. Han continued,
We have one vertical takeoff from the port's main launch area. I think it's a ballistic transport outbound, and... Fear feck. Looks like a small vessel, corvette class at least, heading our way.
Go to battle stations, Lando said unnecessarily.
The shields were already up, and he'd seen Han power up the yacht's weapons without authorization a moment earlier.
Yes, Captain.
Try to open a channel to our escorts.
Yes, Captain. Han scowled at Lando, then returned his attention to his boards. Leia lifted Love Commander off in the wake of the X-Wings. Lando felt himself being pressed back into his seat as the yacht's inertial compensators failed to keep up completely with the demands of vehicular acceleration.
Love Commander to X-Wing Escort, come in.
Love Commander, this is Pulsar Skate.
It was a female voice, and one Lando didn't recognize.
Stand by to receive line-of-sight transmission of encryption code. 3, 2, 1, sending. Got it?
Got it, Han said. Implementing now.
There was a burst of static, then the woman's voice returned.
Encryption activated. Can you still read me?
We hear you just fine, Han said. I'm going to switch you over to our captain. I'm going to have to shoot things pretty soon, and he doesn't have anything to do.
He pressed a button. The holocam view faded from Lando's display and was replaced with the face of a girl, young, pretty, with blue hair highlighted by yellow streaks. She looked familiar.
Miri Antilles here, she said. Impromptu comm officer for Pulsar Skate.
Suddenly, Lando felt 10,000 years old. The last time he'd seen Miri, she'd been a little girl. He forced a smile.
Miri, it's your Uncle Lando.
Lando, hey, the white hair and beard look really good on you. Are they real?
No, of course not. It's a wig and makeup.
Ah, you've lost all your hair?
No, my hair is black. Well, gray-black. This just isn't it. I still have all my own hair.
Sure you do, Han whispered. Lando gritted his teeth.
Miri, sweetheart, does your daddy have an exit vector?
Sure. First we go shoot at the Corvette.
No, no, no. We need to go away from the Corvette.
The Corvette's all alone over the ocean, and every other direction has multiple starfighters and attack craft coming toward us. And assuming we can cripple the Corvette, we should make orbit with no problem. But then we run into the Alliance blockade ships. That's where the problem comes in.
Suddenly, Lando felt young and useful again.
Ah, that's no problem.
No?
No. A kind young blockade lieutenant gave me a passcode the other day.
Oh, good. Oops, we're at extreme firing range in 10 seconds. 9.
As Miri counted down, Lando switched his display view to a sensor screen. Their miniature task force was now away from Coronet, out over the water, still gaining altitude. There were numerous blips back over the city, small units of attack craft headed their way. Mercifully, Han was screening their comm traffic and keeping it from coming over the control cabin speakers. Love Commander and Pulsar Skate were now side by side, only a couple of 100 meters separating them, and the two X-Wings were a few kilometers out in advance. In the distance was the blip of a small capital ship, and as the distance closed, a designation popped up for it on the screen. CEC Corvette 1177 Siliban. Lando winced out of sympathy for Leia. When she was just a teenage senator for the planet of Alderaan, her chief transport had been a Corellian Corvette, the Tantive IV. Long and narrow, with a bow like a sledgehammer head turned sideways and a rectangular stern that was little more than stacked banks of thrusters, the Tantive IV had held a special place in her affections. And it had to be upsetting to have a near-identical vessel trying to shoot her down now. Miri's countdown reached 1. Lando opened his mouth to order Han to open fire, but Han opened up before he could speak. Lando saw the yacht's lasers lance in on a distant target, joined by the pulsar skates, and saw the glow as the Siliban's shields soaked up the laser barrage. The two X-Wings climbed relative to the plane of battle, performing evasive maneuvering in unison, so close that they registered as a single blip on the sensors. Lando frowned over that.
What do they think they're doing? They're going to bump, and then it'll be all over for them.
He'd forgotten his comm channel was still open.
Bump?
The voice was that of Mirax Horn.
Come over here, Lando, and I'll bump you.
Calm down, calm down.
That was Iella.
This is why men should only be put in command of single-pilot fighters. On bigger craft, they have too much time on their hands, so they talk too much.
Hey, Lando protested. Love Commander rocked as beams from the Corvette's twin turbolaser cannons grazed her shields. Lando started to say something about more evasive maneuvering, but Leia abruptly put the yacht into such torturous dives and turns that Lando's stomach flip-flopped. He clamped his mouth shut and concentrated on not losing his dinner. Through the viewport, he could see the Corvette's bottom turbolasers firing on the Love Commander and Pulsar Skate, and the craft's topside turbolasers trying to target the X-Wings. As they neared the Corvette, the X-Wings abruptly separated, both staying above the relative plane of battle, but one arcing to port and the other to starboard. Both sets of turbolasers initially followed the same X-Wing, wedges, according to the sensor screen. Then both switched to open up on Corrin's. By this time, both X-Wings were past the stern of the Corvette. Lando could see some bright spots at the stern of the Corellian ship, points where fire from the X-Wing's turbolasers had struck. Now both X-Wings looped around to orient in on the engines, and the Corvette commander, belatedly recognizing that the two snub fighters packed more firepower than the yachts still headed their way, tried to turn toward them and protect his engines. But the X-Wings came in firing, their angry red laser fire chipping away at the stern shields, concentrating on the same area of engines, and then penetrating. Lando saw red light suffuse the Corvette's stern, and an explosion lit the ocean below. No, the Corvette hadn't exploded. Only a portion of its engine compartment had been lost. But the vessel began to lose altitude and turned away from the conflict area. The X-Wings turned back toward the space yachts. And finally, because he had the ticket off this world and out of this system, Lando could take charge again.
"Pulsar Skate," he said, "and X-Wing escorts. Form up on Love, Commander. We're headed for orbit."
"And then where?" Han asked. Finally, Wedge's voice crackled over the comlink.
"To a gathering of old friends," he said.
Coruscant, Jedi Temple. Ben's opponent wasn't particularly impressive. The droid had a scrawny body, its four spindly legs just sturdy enough to allow it to walk around. Its two arms ended not in hands, but in tubes about 8 centimeters in diameter, and its head was huge, the size of an entire R2 unit, with two green glowing optical sensors where eyes would be, and a set of speaker vents in the position of a human mouth. In the mirror that ran the full length of the chamber on one wall, they seemed unlikely combatants. A droid with a ludicrously large head, and a friendly-looking teenage boy with bright red hair in a Buzz-style haircut.
"Last series,"
it announced, its voice surprisingly human considering its alien appearance.
"Ready."
To better test himself, Ben left his lightsaber off for the moment and turned his back on the droid. He extended his feelings through the Force and tried to find the droid, and was mildly distressed once again to find that he could not. He concealed his worry.
"Ready."
There was a punk noise as the first foam steel ball left one of the droid's arm tubes, and that, Ben felt, as a displacement of air, as a little tickle of worry. He could sense the direction of the ball's travel, straight toward the back of his head. He swung around, sidestepping the ball's path, igniting the lightsaber as second, third, and fourth balls shot out toward him. He swung at the first one, but his blade was only half extended, and his strike was half a meter short of its target. The second ball shot harmlessly past him, but he connected with the third and fourth, sending them ricocheting away from him. Their glossy exteriors took the momentary contact with a coherent light blade without melting or deforming. Then more balls came pouring from the droid's arms. Ponk, 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 ponk. The droid varied its aim, firing at Ben's feet, chest, head, arms, aiming at positions bracketing Ben in case his dodging moved him into their path. He didn't deflect all of them. One cracked painfully into his left knee, another grazed his cheek, but his success ratio was pretty high. He could feel the balls moving around behind him along the gleaming Apasha hardwood floor. They separated into two streams, circling around him back toward the droid, controlled by the magnetic impulses it was sending. As Ben watched and deflected two more balls, the first ones that had been sent against him reached the base of the droid, flew up to hover above the droid's head, and dropped into the slot there. Back in the hopper, they could be fired at him again. On impulse, Ben chose one of the balls now approaching the droid and reached out to it through the force. He stomped with his foot, physicalizing the way he wanted to direct his attack, and lashed out with force energy. The ball flattened, becoming a disc wider than but about half as tall as it had been before. It still flew up to hover above the droid's head, and when it dropped toward the slot, Ben gave it some extra energy. It hit the slot and half-folded, jamming into place. Swatting away at the next four balls, Ben watched as half a dozen more dropped onto the droid's head, bounced off the ruined ball, fell to the floor, and rolled around to get to the backs of the two lines of balls awaiting retrieval. No more balls emerged from the droid. Ben waited, watching, as expended balls from the two lines flew up over the droid, bounced off, fell to the ground, and got back in line again. Then that action, too, ceased. Released from magnetic control, most of the balls now stayed where they lay. A few rolled a handspan in one direction or another before coming to a stop. Ben felt the tiniest of tugs against his lightsaber. He gripped it hard just before it tried to yank itself out of his hand. It struggled with him, attempting to fly to the droid. But he got his left hand on it as well and held firm. He deactivated it and grinned at the practiced droid. Finally, the lightsaber, too, stopped trying to move on its own. The droid said, "Have you sabotaged me?"
"Yes," Ben said, "in the, spirit of defeating an enemy."
"I shall file your action under tactics, then. I designate this exercise complete. Last series success ratio 94%. Last series ended at 22% of balls expended due to tactical sabotage. Learner weapon retention successful."
The droid rolled toward the door out of the training hall, and the balls, now returning to their straight-line formations, rolled out after it. Leaving, the droid passed another Jedi learner waiting beside the door. She must have entered while Ben was in the midst of the last exercise, and he recognized, with a little flash of embarrassment, that he hadn't detected her. He had been too focused on his task. She was several centimeters taller than he was, 3 or 4 years older, and red-headed, her long hair a shade more coppery than his mother's. She came forward as the balls continued to roll out of the hall.
"Hello."
"Hello." Ben returned his lightsaber to its belt hook. She extended a hand.
"I'm Siha. Siha Dorvald."
"I know." He took her hand to shake it. There was something in her hand. Something small and rectangular. A card of some sort. But her expression didn't change. She didn't acknowledge that she'd just handed him anything. A little thrill shot through Ben. He knew why. First, she was really good-looking, and she was talking to him. Second, she'd just done something covert. He wondered what was on the card. Instructions to meet her somewhere? A communication from the government of Corellia, begging his help to resolve the military crisis? An offer of a bribe? He'd just been kicked out of a practice session straight into a holodrama, and he keenly felt the transition.
"I've seen you around,"
he finished, trying not to stammer.
I'm Ben Skywalker.
I know.
She retrieved her hand, leaving the card in his grip.
I just wanted to say...
Pocket the card now?
No, if anyone is watching, that might call attention to the fact that she gave me something. And if she's giving me something this way, she thinks somebody is watching.
Ben let his hand drop to his side and hoped his posture was natural-looking.
I thought the thing with flattening the ball was very imaginative, and I was wondering...
He had to get to his quarters and find out what was on the card, though he'd also like to just stay here and look at her for a couple of days. It was very hard for him to concentrate on Siha's words.
If you'd mind if I, you know, sort of stole your technique for my next session...
About 40 different answers roared in to clog up Ben's brain.
Sure, you're really cute. If you're still doing these exercises, are you a late starter like me? Your accent is very undercity, but you talk like you've been educated.
How would Jason answer her question?
That last thought allowed Ben to clear his mind. He'd analyze her question, instantly figure out the consequences, and be very cool about it.
I'd be, what was the word? Flattered.
But before the last word left his lips, a possible consequence occurred to him.
But you probably don't want to do that.
Why not?
She didn't seem offended, just curious. Ben gestured at the doorway.
The droid has a learning program. He'll be coming up with or requesting new programming to counteract a ball-flattening tactic. So if you do that, you also need to figure out what he'll do then and be prepared for that, too.
Good point. I'll do that. You're smart, too.
Too? In addition to what?
I was wondering about your braid.
She pointed to the narrow braid of hair that dangled from his scalp, especially obvious when contrasted with his buzz cut. It was now draped across his shoulder.
That's kind of old-fashioned, isn't it? Does the Order still do that somewhere?
Ben shook his head.
No, just me.
He wasn't even sure why he'd grown it out. Just to have something that was his alone, perhaps. Something to set him apart from his famous parents. He wasn't sure how to say that in a way that wouldn't sound juvenile or egotistical.
It's my custom.
I think it's astral. Anyway... I need to get to my next lesson. It was nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
He watched her leave, feeling as though he had to be flushing as red as her hair, and finally tucked the card she'd given him into his belt, hoping that the action would not be obvious to unseen eyes.
In addition to what?
On the walk back to his quarters, he thought about what to do. The fact that Siha seemed to think she, or he, or both of them, would be under observation bothered him.
Are Dad and Mom having me watched?
That question left a sour taste in his mind.
Or is someone watching Siha? But if I'm the one being watched, how do I find out what's on the card?
Not a temple computer. That could be monitored. Come to think of it, so could any datapad capable of transmitting and receiving. But a datapad without a comlink would be safe, if he could find one. Or make one. He stopped in at a playroom set aside for Rontos, students 3 to 5 years younger than Ben. There were no children or adults present, but there were games and toys scattered here and there among the cushiony chairs and other brightly colored items of furniture. As he knew there must be, there were datapads. Most of them with larger controls suited to smaller, clumsier fingers, and one of them had a privacy headset. He took it. He stepped into a closet used to hold cleaning supplies. Standing in the narrow gap between shelves holding pungent-smelling bottles and plastic containers, he opened the datapad and quickly stripped out its communications chip. He felt nervous doing this anywhere in the temple, but didn't think that, even if he was under near-constant observation,
They could have put holocams everywhere. Not in a cleaning supply closet. Surely not. In his quarters, he moved his chair so that he could sit with his back to a corner. He made a slightly exaggerated show of selecting a game card from his small collection of entertainments. As he was sitting down, he palmed the game card and inserted Siha's instead. Then he donned the headset and accessed the card. The Galactic Alliance guard logo came up with a brief message. Special Agent Ben Skywalker, enter access code. Ben typed in the password he used in the GAG offices to access messages and orders. The message changed to say, sound mode for secure surroundings or text mode for public areas. He chose sound. The screen flickered, and Jason's image came up. Ben, Jason said, his voice a little thin over the headset speakers. This is important. Memorize the information on this card. Replay it if necessary. Once you're sure you have it memorized, destroy the chip. Don't just break it. Destroy it irretrievably. He paused as if to give Ben time to absorb the gravity of his words. Ben felt that thrill again. This is real. This is important. And this means Siha is working with Jason. She's an ally. I need to send you on a mission, Jason continued. You specifically. Because it has to be someone with the GAG's interests. My interests at heart. Someone who is force-sensitive, and someone who has proven that he can operate alone. That's you or me, and I can't leave my duties at this time. I'm sorry about interrupting your training, and sorrier still that this may cause friction between you and your parents, but I'll make them understand that this was all my doing. Here's the essential core of the mission. Remember it, so that if anything goes wrong with the operational details I give you, you'll remember what's most important. You're to acquire the amulet of Kalara and secretly bring it to me. The image switched to a standard planetary data screen, with the name Almania at the top. Jason's voice continued, The amulet is on the planet of Almania, in the planetary offices of Tendrondo Arms. It resides in a display case on the 215th floor of their office building. Security in the building is nothing special, since it's shared by hundreds of different firms. And security on the display case is also poor, because the owner doesn't know what he possesses. The image changed to a close-up view of a jewel hanging from a silver chain. The jewel was a gray oval, its surface knobby and textured rather than smooth. In the center of the face was a vertical bar of some ruby-like gem, flanked by lustrous black semi-precious stone. The effect was rather like looking at a silvery feline eye with a red, slitted pupil. This is the amulet of Kalara, Jason continued. Now, the important thing. Ben, if this gets into the hands of a force-sensitive, who knows the secrets of its activation, we're all in trouble. Because while such a person has it activated, he will be invisible in the Force. Even his use of the Force is invisible to other Force users. Think about what that means. He'll be like one of the Yuuzhan Vong warriors, but can be a normal person. Human, Rodian, Bith, whatever. He would be a tremendous danger to your parents, the Order, me, everyone and everything. If you find the amulet in its display case, wonderful. We're going to give you a replacement to leave for the real thing. Mission accomplished, but if anyone gets his hands on it. The image switched back to Jason.
and he was even more grave than before. You have to assume that he knows its secret, that he's a powerful dark Jedi or other Force-sensitive, and that he can activate it at any moment. Then you have to eliminate him before he eliminates you. I'm sorry, but it's true. A weight settled in Ben's stomach. What Jason was suggesting sounded like, under the right circumstances, it could be murder. But if the amulet was what Jason said, it had to be put in the right hands. Had to be. So, at any point in the next 2 nights, you need to visit the temple's fourth-level exercise changing room. Open the leftmost locker, combination 686, and retrieve the packet of clothes and items there.